We know what we think. What do you think? Call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Vic Monagle here with you on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Breaking news in the early morning. I very rarely get to say that. Paul George has reached an agreement with the 76ers. 4 years, $212 million, $54 million a year. There is a player option or player opt-out in there. And now begs the question, how good is this Knicks team and how does it compare with the rest of the East? We know what Boston is, obviously defending champs. We know the two stars in Milwaukee, and now you add Paul George to Embiid and Maxey, who we saw Maxey grow before our very eyes in the postseason last year. We knew he was good before that, but really the way he emerged in the postseason really just, you know, kind of really jumped out at you. So now you add Paul George to that, who, yeah, has his flaws, not a perfect player, aging. Injury prone, couldn't stay happy in LA after promising championships to that franchise, but he has now moved to Philadelphia for $54 million a year. And now that roster, you got to try and compare to the New York Knicks, as the Knicks are trying to be that best team in the East. Something that just a few days ago, Knicks fans probably felt like they were only second to Boston. And I'm curious how you feel now with Paul George. I'm still inclined to feel the same way with the depth of the roster. And we just had a caller there who talked about moving on from Julius Randle and moving on from Mitchell Robinson. Now, the Mitchell Robinson thing, I agree. I like Mitchell Robinson. I think he's slightly better than that caller mentioned. I think he's a legitimate, great defender. The way he played defense on Embiid was dramatically, you know, changed that game. Was it game two? Whatever game it was, dramatically changed that game. He's a great defender. He can rebound. But I do agree his offensive game is not as good as Hartenstein, certainly, and it doesn't help the team as much. Plus, it's the injury issue. And if you're going to have, and I said it before they got Mikal Bridges, if you were going to bring back Anunoby, I didn't like Anunoby and Mitchell Robinson both on this team because they're so injury-prone. To have the idea of two out of the five starters be that injury prone, it's not ideal. I don't love it. So I would much rather convince Hartenstein, who's met with the Thunder, who, without question, unless everyone who's got a read on this thing is completely wrong, he's going to get offered more money, whether it be with the Thunder or someone else. He's going to be offered more money than the Knicks can offer him. So the question is, will he be willing to leave money on the table? And which I suppose OG Anunoby did, right? There's thoughts that he could have got the max deal. Is he willing to leave money on the table to come back with New York and try and, you know, build something here and win a championship here? But either case, I don't want to jettison Julius Randle just yet. I understand he needs the ball. I understand he's a little bit different than Brunson, who kind of needs the ball, but he can facilitate as well. And surely, you know, Mikal Bridges can shoot. And Randle specifically needs to get the ball going downhill, attack the basket. I don't think it's iso ball. I think it's going to change. I think what we saw from January of last year really embodies what they can be. Plus, you add another scorer like a Mikal Bridges. I only think it helps. I want to see what that team looks like. I do, because I do believe, you know, Randle's an elite player, and I think it's unfair to categorize him as a player who plays iso ball and who couldn't make it through the postseason and who's always injured. I don't feel like he's always injured. He had the ankle injury in the playoffs last year, and then he had this injury. I don't remember him missing a ton of time with the New York Knicks. Maybe I'm missing another injury, but it's certainly not like Mitchell Robinson or OG Anunoby, who are consistently injured every year on some level. I don't think I put Randle in that scenario. This was a weird fluke play, and he hurt his ankle in the playoffs 2 years ago. That's about it. I want to see that group. I mean, I do. That I want to see all three of those players. I want to see the explosiveness. I want to see the ability to have, you know, either Randall step up or Mikal Bridges step up and not have it be in Brunson's hands as much. Now, many people going through the postseason last year felt like the Knicks were better in that scenario. That felt like Randall being down allowed Brunson to emerge, and in some ways it did, without question, in the regular season, then in the postseason. But I don't know if that necessarily makes the Knicks better. Needing 40 points out of Jalen Brunson is not a way to make the Knicks better. I think having multiple scoring options and, you know, the ability to pass it off on any given night if Mikal Bridges is hot or if Randall's getting to the basket or whatever the case may be, I think that only helps the Knicks. And again, if we're going to run it back, right, and I guess that's what we're classifying it. We're adding another Villanova guy. We're adding a Villanova 4, which, by the way, I said it before, I'll say it again. Someone needs to make the Villanova 4 Abbey Road t-shirt. I need it bad. I have a core 4 Yankee Beetle walking across the road, picture hanging in my house. I need the Nova 4 Beatles walking across Abbey Road shirt. Need it bad. But you're going to bring him into this, so he's obviously going to fit. There's no way he doesn't fit. He's going to fit. Plus, you have OG back. Like, if you're going to try and recapture January, stay healthy, and see what this Knick team can be, then the last thing I want to do is change Randall unless I feel I have to. And I don't feel like I have to. I really don't. And we'll see what happens with Hartenstein. Prevailing thought is he won't be back because, yeah, you can appeal to him on how important he's going to be, and you can appeal to him on building something here and that they gave him a chance and other than that. But this is a guy who is a role player in the NBA who has an opportunity to make big-time money. I'm not going to begrudge him. He might not never get another contract or an opportunity to sign a contract like this ever again. He's coming off a great year. He played great for the Knicks. He gave them everything they could have possibly asked. He played through an Achilles injury. Hartenstein was incredible. Mitchell Robinson comes down, boom. He gets out. He gets 19 rebounds the first game without him. His passing ability dramatically helped. His little short, little push shot was a weapon at times. He did great, and I wish him the best, and I hope he stays still. But I'm not going to begrudge him taking the money because I just don't know how his next couple of years go or if he'll ever get another opportunity to sign a contract like this again. So we'll see. But if I'm bringing it back, I'm bringing it back. And I'm not changing Randall. Not now, at least. There'll be an opportunity still to do that, I suppose. I wouldn't do it until I see how this team meshes and gels. 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. Plus the baseball, which we talked about all morning. If you want to give me a call on that, the Mets for me, we can get into the song stuff and whether or not we're going to blame it on it. I think that's just stupid. I don't think the Astros were upset by the concert the other night, and that leads to losing the last two games. It's about the bullpen. It's always been about the bullpen. The bullpen is a glaring weakness for the New York Mets right now. The rotation and their inability to get deep into games while still, you know, having a decent ERA and never getting blown out and giving the Mets a chance to win for the most part with this now really depleted lineup, whether it's, you know, Brooks Raley, who's been down for a while, or Reed Foley and now Drew Smith, plus Diaz for the next five games still on suspension. The bullpen's thin, and the rotation doesn't go deep enough. And despite being able to outslug everybody over the last, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they were unable to do so the last 2 days, and the bullpen came up and bit them in these last two games against Houston. Unable to score in the 10th inning was really their downfall. You knew they were going to blow it eventually. They had to bring in a guy, you know, they had to bring in the Matt Festa of the world and see what he could do in his first appearance with the Mets. So that was bound to happen. But now, how do they bounce back? It was the same thing I felt after they lost that winning streak. When they lost that final game to Texas and they had a day off following it and they were going to go play Imanaga and the Cubs, how were they going to respond to losing that game? And they responded with flying colors and absolutely pounded Imanaga, one of the best pitchers in the National League all year. And now they've lost their first series in a month. How do they respond on a four-game set in Washington in a, you know, a team they're competing with inside this NL wildcard race? This is a huge series. The next eight, Washington-Pittsburgh, huge series. Actually, I think it's Washington-Pittsburgh-Washington, if I'm not mistaken. Yes. So, I mean, you are playing the Nationals seven times in the next 11 games. And that's why, you know, this stretch leading into the All-Star game, and then, you know, furthermore, leading in to the trade deadline is so important for the Mets. And that's why when I hear these stories or reports or questions asked to the general manager about selling and buying at the same time, it pisses me off. This team's shown you enough. This offense group has shown you enough. And this idea that you have enough starting pitching and you have, you know, all this expendable starting pitching because we know Christian Scott's going to be an ace and we know Budo is going to be great. And so we can afford to trade Severino and acquire some, maybe some draft picks we feel good about and you ship them, either keep them and ship the other prospects or ship prospects that we get back from Severino out for relief pitching to bolster the team. I'm not doing both. Take the prospects you currently have and go get relievers while keeping Severino your best starting pitcher. And then for the Yankees, it's all about Gleyber Torres and this offense and Gerrit Cole stepping up in what was the biggest start of the year, finding a way to avoid losing 3 out of 4 to a last-place Blue Jays team after watching the guy who we've all been talking about, possibly trading for him, Vladimir Guerrero, own them, hit a home run, I think 3 out of the 4 games in the series, just dominate them, along with IKF, and they found a way to step up. Gleyber Torres got hot. He's now got multiple hits in 3 consecutive games. God knows they need him. The whole issue with Marcus Stroman, which at the time felt like this team was falling apart. Watching him on the mound screaming about Gleyber Torres not turning a double play, I really had this thought like, okay, Boone, all right, I've defended you. I said you're a good manager. Here comes a major test. Because the night before you had Carlos Rodon screaming at Ben Rice at first base for allowing a ball to get through and hit the base and lead to a huge inning, or at least be part of a huge inning. Now you got Marcus Stroman screaming at Gleyber Torres, doing what the whole fan base wants to do. The whole fan, you just benched him, you know, for 2 days to try and get his head straight, and the first game he's back, you got Marcus Stroman screaming at him for no damn reason. It just felt like, boy, Boone's really got, this team is not only floundering, it is falling apart. And then Soto hits that home run, and suddenly everything felt like it was what's needed to happen. Suddenly it felt like Stroman needed to yell it. Suddenly it felt like there needed to be a little bit of urgency and someone pissed off and someone creating a little bit of, you know, anger like the fan base has. It felt like it was needed. And then you got the home run from Gleyber and you got the double from DJ LeMahieu and you scored all those runs and it felt like there was something lifted off. And even though they got bombed the next day, which pissed me off for multiple reasons, they do bounce back, win the last 2 out of 3 of a 4-game set, find a way to get a split, and now hopefully Gleyber Torres, who got 2 hits in the last 3 games each, multiple hits in each 3 games, can find a way to go about getting hot and actually impacting this team. 888-808-1019, let's get to your calls. Danny in Belrose, what's up, Danny?
Hey, good morning, Chris. How you doing?
Good morning, sir. How are we doing?
Pretty good. I had a good weekend. You know, worked one day. You know, went to a fair. The other, pretty good. How about you?
Yeah, good. You know, I worked one day. I went to a birthday party. We went and saw Inside Out yesterday. You know how it is.
Did you like that? I saw it already.
Yeah, Inside Out 2. I thought it was great. I think the Inside Out the movies are so well thought out, so well written to come up with how our emotions can control us and build. How each person builds their self-worth and self-opinion. It was like, it's really out there how clever they are with all of it.
Oh, yeah, that's great. Yeah,
it is very good.
Yeah, so for the Yankees, the Yankees looked pretty good yesterday. It's about time Cole got the rust off, which is nice.
Yeah.
You know, Gleyber looked better, you know.
Yep. I forgot to mention the obviously the health scare, too, of Juan Soto, who hurts his hand on a really like fun, hard-nosed baseball IQ on the base paths from our two best hitters. They're supposed to be hitting home runs and trotting around the bases, not forcing, you know, a rundown that gets that ends up scoring a run and hurts his hand. So he misses the next day. They get blown out. Then you find out he's not in the original lineup for yesterday, and he's going to get more imaging on Monday, and it's just a disaster. And then I turn on my TV to catch the first inning, and there he is in the batter's box. And I'm like, oh, I guess Soto's okay.
Yeah,
and it just took a huge breath of relief. And besides So between Soto not, you know, being too injured to play, LeMahieu coming through with another double in this game, and Glaber having three consecutive two-hit games, yes, you need to see more, but at least it starts to give you some belief that hopefully they can start turning this thing around.
Yeah, they're starting to get the engine revving. I mean, it's totally but surely, but at least they're tied at first. You know, obviously Baltimore is a little ahead because of the season series, but I'm not worried about it. They're going to be all right. They'll probably pick up somebody, maybe an infielder, maybe a bullpen guy, you know, for the trade deadline. Right,
they better do at least that.
Yeah. But they'll be fine. And then the Knicks, they had to re-sign Hartenstein. Otherwise, I can't really think of anything else. I mean, hopefully Mitchell will come back healthy and they'll be all right, you know.
Oh, no, I mean, they'll be more than all right. The question is whether or not the Knicks are going to be all right. The Knicks are going to be good. The Knicks are going to be one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. There's no doubt about it. The Knicks are a playoff team. The Knicks are at worst a 4 or 5 seed, and that's worse. Last year, you were hoping for the 4 seed. This year, you better get the 4 seed. At least. That's where we're feeling. It's a completely different animal. They're going to be more than all right. The question is, are they going to be a legitimate championship contender? Forget all right. Are they one of the best rosters in the East? Prevailing thought was that they were the second best roster in the East. Prior to last night, or this morning, excuse me, where now Paul George has joined the 76ers, joined Embiid and Maxey, and they have their three. Oubre as well has come back, so they have role players who can shoot a little bit. We know that team up close and personal. We saw what Maxey can become and what he did become in the postseason. And that's a dangerous team. Plus, a healthy Giannis and Dame, they're a dangerous team. And, of course, the Boston Celtics. So where are the Knicks in that pantheon of the best teams in the Eastern Conference? And what do they have to do at center? Hartenstein's meeting with other teams, and it sounds like from everything you read and everything you hear, is that he is going to get more money with someone else. That the Knicks do not have the money to give him the kind of contract he will get from the Thunder he met with today or whomever else. But does he want to come back? Because OG turned down a little bit of money. We're hoping to see the possibility of Brunson signing a max contract a year earlier and taking a little bit of money. Maybe that thing is, you know, convincing. Hey, come back. We're building something special. I took less money. OG took less money. Come here. We're going to win. You're going to get your money. That's what I would love to see because I think his offensive game really suits the team, and I'd love to see Hartenstein back, and I would love me personally, sign Hartenstein, trade away Mitchell Robinson is what I would do. Because once I got OG back, I don't like two of my five starting players to be this injury prone. I don't like it. So I would bring back Hartenstein, trade Mitch Robinson, if I can. So we'll see.
When this happened, you talk about it on The Fan.
David Wells has pitched a perfect game. 27 up, 27 down. Baseball immortality for David Wells. And the Yankees win. The Yankees win.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, hello. Okay. 427, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. 888-808-1019. So we'll get back to the calls in a second. I just wanted to tell a quick story about the other day. I talked about this yesterday, but I'm still coming to terms with it. I got stuck at a carnival on a slide. It was the most... It's so frustrating and so stupid. It was one of those slides that it's like a kid's slide, but it's really tall. And it's one of those, like, you know, the plastic slides with kind of the bumps in the middle as you go down. And they provide these, like, carpet sacks that you have to put underneath you to slide down. And you have to walk up this very narrow, I mean, very narrow staircase to get to the top. So my kids want to go on it. They walk up the ladder to the top of the slide. And they're up there, and I just see them standing there. And other kids are coming down and they're just standing there. And I'm looking at them and I realize they don't have a carpet. I thought there would be a guy up there at the top providing carpets. There is not. The guy at the bottom taking the people off once they go down the slide is handing out the carpets as you walk past him to go up. We didn't see that. We just went up the stairs. So now they're standing at the top of the slide without carpets to go down, and they don't know what to do. So I grab two carpets from the guy, walk up this narrow staircase. I give it to my kids. They slide down. Great. Mission accomplished, except one thing. Now I'm at the top of the slide, and I don't have a carpet. And I saw a kid go down the slide without the carpet, or it was out in front of him, and it was, he barely moved, because it's not one of those slides that are straight down. It's kind of like very, you know, it's not really on a steep angle, and it's like a bumpy thing. You have to get the good momentum of the slickness, otherwise you don't go down well. And I heard like screeching skin, and he was like upset, and he had to like push himself down the slide, and I ain't doing that. So I'm at the top of this slide, and as I realize, there's a never-ending parade of people coming up the stairs, and the staircase is too narrow to go down. So I'm just stuck up there, and I'm trying to like wave to my wife to tell her to like try and stop the people from coming up the stairs. I'm just standing, and the kids just keep walking up the stairs in waves. Every time I think I might have a second, another group comes walking up, and I just feel like the biggest, people think I work there, like the kids are looking, no other adults are up there, it's just the kid, and I have no idea what to do. I was up there for 7 minutes, and I'm thinking to myself, does my wife not realize I'm not there? Like, what are you saying? I went up the slide, I didn't come down. Like, are you bothering to look for me? I don't know what she's doing. I'm texting her, she's not answering her phone. I'm at the top of the slide at the mercy. Nobody stops walking up the slide. I was up there for 5 minutes standing up there like an idiot. I should have just went down the slide, but I didn't want to embarrass myself getting stuck on this non-high-angled slide. And I didn't want to get any like plastic burn or anything on my legs. And I'm figuring, oh, there'll be a moment. I'm trying to get my wife's attention. And I'm just standing there waving like an idiot at the top of the slide. I was so mad. You know those things when you do something stupid or whatever, you get caught in a moment, and you're just like, I'm so mad at myself for doing this. That was me at the top of this stupid slide in front of everybody in Warwick. Everybody in my town. I'm surprised people didn't walk by and point at me laughing. I'm like this, honey, Sarah! She's not hearing me. I'm texting her. I'm like, didn't you realize I wasn't? Like, finally I got her, and she stood at the bottom of the slide and stopped people coming down, coming up for 5 minutes so I could go down. And I'm like, didn't you notice I was gone? She's like, oh, I was talking to this one. Yeah, you're talking to that one. I'm up there waving like an idiot. It's one of those moments that you can't believe your own life. 888-808-1019, 888-808-1019. So that's how I spent my Friday night, stuck on a slide. I tried to go skydiving once, and I was over the weight limit. I'm too fat to fall, and I'm too awkward to go down a slide. That's what I'm learning about myself. Tony in Milford. What's up, Tony? New Milford, not old Milford. Sorry, New Milford.
You got to be kidding me with that slide story. Yeah. How are you?
I'm good, man. But yeah, no, I wasn't for a moment. I was mad. And like, it's just, and every kid that comes up, they stare at you like, what are you doing up here? Do I need to do something? They don't know. Like, so every kid that would come up, he would look at me, or she would look at me like, what do I need to, I'm like, no, just, I'm waiting. And it's just like, and then my kids like come up the ride and ride it again. And I'm still like, I'm like, and what am I going to do? Take one of their sacks and leave them up there without a slack? So I'm like, just go down and tell your mother. And that's eventually how I got them. Eventually how I got my wife is my kids came back up again. And
I thought you were going to tell me you got stuck halfway down on one of those bumps.
No, I'm on top. And I'm not great with heights either, to be honest. And it's this little barrel. It's not meant to stand on for 20 minutes. It's this little ledge practically where you just go down the slide. And I'm standing there. And like it was just so awkward.
You should have just been like, "Hi, my name's Chris. I'm meet and greet." You know?
Yeah.
Let me help out with that.
Yeah. You guys want to talk Yankees?
Well, no. I was going to say something about Danny Jones.
I was saying that's what I would say to the kids coming as I'm waiting with them.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry, Dave. didn't mean to.
You ruined the joke.
I ruined.
You ruined the joke. Good. I'm sorry.
I like your take on Boone yesterday with the.
Yeah, I've never been more I've never been more angry or disappointed in a Boone decision. I hated it. Hated it.
Don't make sense. I listen to you. It don't make sense.
It doesn't make. If you're gonna pitch him anyway, if you were gonna stay away from him, fine. Stay away from him. It's in the sixth inning. You're down four runs already. Fine. That's not a place for a closer. Even if he's successful, you're still down four runs. I get it. But if you're gonna pitch him anyway because he hasn't worked in 5 days, why wait until the game's over in the eighth inning? Bring him in when the game is still on the line. Bring him in to face instead of throwing out your left-handed slop against Vladimir Guerrero. Bring in your closer in that moment if he's pitching that game anyway.
I think they got this mentality like he's a closer. We can only bring him in.
No, I get that. Yeah, too much.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no. Too many teams are victim to that, and we've seen other like Buck used to do it with Diaz. He would bring him in as late as the seventh with two outs or something. He wouldn't give him the seventh inning to start necessarily, but in a jam, he'd go to the seventh or eighth. The six is a little early. The only reason I'm complaining about it, the only reason, is because they were going to use him anyway. If he pitched the day before, I don't want to waste him. But he hadn't pitched in 5 days. He's going to pitch anyway. Why not pitch him when the game's on the line? Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. Or if you had a good option, fine. But you can't tell me you're going to bring in Ferguson, your left-handed pitcher, to face Vladimir Guerrero with the bases loaded to turn a four-run game into a seven-run game. I mean, why? It made absolutely no sense. And I defend Boone. I still think he's a good manager. That made absolutely no freaking sense to me.
I like him. I like him a lot. So what was I going to say? First of all, I want to set the record straight. You're not a jerk. So
thank you very much.
I can't believe that guy.
I didn't know what he was saying. I guess he called me a jerk. He just said jerk, and I guess he was referring to me. I don't know.
Yeah, but the way he said it, he goes, jerk, like that, you know? But anyway, so...
I think he's the jerk.
I'm going to reconsider, Chris. I'm going to reconsider because if you save $54 million one more time, 4 years, $212 million is $53 million. Now, don't say 54 again.
Okay. Are you sure?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm an idiot. You know, I'm sorry. You know what? I'm not kidding. I'll take a picture of it and tweet it. I put 212, but I didn't round off the bottom too much, and I mistook it for a 7. So when I brought when I brought down the 212, I brought down 17, and 4 and 4 is 16. You're right, 53. No, you're right. That's a stupid. I'm an idiot. I didn't round off the 2 at the bottom enough, and I thought it was a 7 when I did the math.
After the fourth time you said 54,
no, you're right. It's a bad job.
Like the Aflac duck, I was thinking right.
No, it's a bad job. I'm looking at it. I brought down.
No, that's cool.
I brought down the 7 for 17. 4 times 6. I had it at 54.1 million, like an idiot.
So listen, Danny Jones. All right.
Yeah, Daniel Jones.
Danny's going to have a great year, Chris. That's all I'm going to say because he's using all his bulls. I mean, he knows. He listens to that. You know, he knows what everybody's saying.
Half
the people want to throw him out of town. You know, half the people love him. I think he's going to use it as motivation and healthy. If he makes right choices, don't try to stick your head in too many extra yardage, you know, get yourself all banged up. But I think he's going to have a good year, and I hope so. And I know that'll make you happy.
Well, yeah, of course it will. I mean, I don't get it wrong. I hope Daniel Jones wins the freaking Super Bowl and the Super Bowl MVP, and he's the quarterback for the next 20 years. What do I care? I'm a Giant fan. I want to win. I just don't believe in it. I don't think it's plausible. I don't think it's possible. I don't think he's going to have a good year. I really don't. I mean, he's a quarterback who needs to use his legs. There's no other way around that. He needs to use his legs, and he's coming off a knee injury, and now every time he gets tackled, I'm worried about his neck. He's missed time in almost every season except the 1 year he took them to the playoffs. The offensive line is still a work in progress. Everyone seems to think they fixed the offensive line, and it's beyond that. Because, I mean, he doesn't get the ball down the field. He doesn't throw touchdown passes. Does he have ability? Sure. Do I think he's the 29th best quarterback in the league? No, I think he's undervalued. It's on some list, I see, where they have rookie guys who haven't played yet as ranked higher than Daniel Jones. I don't think he's the worst quarterback in the NFL. I think he's possibly a starter in the league. I think he's got that kind of talent. But he's just not good enough to do what you need to do with this current Giant roster. He's just not. If you put him on the San Francisco 49ers, could, I'm not saying he's as good as Brock Purdy. I don't know if he could take them to the Super Bowl necessarily. But are the 49ers a winning team if Daniel Jones is there? Yeah, okay, probably. But the Giants haven't built the 49ers roster. And last year, we forget how awful he was. When he was healthy, he was awful. And the year they went to the playoffs, it was hand the ball off to Saquon Barkley. It was look at your first read, and if it's not there, tuck it and run, and don't make mistakes. And there's a fine line, yeah. When you have a last place schedule and your defense pulls a couple of games out of your ass and you manage to win a couple of games you probably shouldn't have with 10-point deficit in the fourth quarter against the Ravens and a 10-point deficit against the Packers in London, you pull out those games and sure, you figure out a way to get to the postseason. And then he was great against Minnesota. Can't take it away from him. He was great in that game. But, I mean, they went a full calendar year without scoring 30 points. I haven't seen it, and it's always one more year. Oh, as long as you fix this. Oh, what he really needs is this. What he really needs is that. Oh, they got Waller. He needs a great pass-catching tight end. Well, he had Evan Ingram, and then Evan Ingram leaves and goes to Jacksonville and becomes the first pass-catching tight end in however, what, 20 years to get 100 receptions? I hope I'm wrong. I do. I hope I'm wrong. I don't know how you could have any faith in Daniel Jones. It's just pie. It's just blind pie in the sky optimism. That's it. It's just pure optimism going off one game against Minnesota. And people forget. People act. It's very much like, you know, the miracle team. The Russian game wasn't the gold medal game. They had to go and win the gold medal game. The Minnesota game wasn't the last game of the playoffs. They didn't carry Daniel Jones off the field and go win a championship. They got their ass kicked the next week against Philadelphia. And he was awful in the game. And then they started last year 40-0. And he's throwing pick six to Seattle. And then when Tyrod Taylor comes in, he's better and makes plays down the field and actually makes Hyatt look like a wide receiver on the team. And then Tommy DeVito comes in and beats a Green Bay Packer team that went on a nice little playoff run and becomes a household name. He's selling tomato sauce. The only thing Daniel Jones is selling, the idea that he's a good quarterback to half the fan base. I don't know how. Blight in Brooklyn. What's up, Blight?
Hey, how you doing, Nick? You hear me clear?
Yeah, whatever, Nick, Mick, Big Mac, whatever you want to call me.
Listen, you had a caller that said that the Knicks should trade Randall for marketing. I don't know where he's getting this from. One thing that Randall gives us, like you said, in January, Knicks played the best ball team played since the 90s. And what Randall gives us, people don't realize, is the toughness, the physicalness. I don't think he's a selfish or one-dimensional ball player. When he's with Brunson, they work fine. That's the best I've ever seen him play when they got Abinobi.
No, I
don't know where they get that from.
No, because now you've added another scorer in Bridges. So the thought process is for games that he's going to play well and score for you, he needs the ball. He's a ball-dominant player. That you can't argue. I mean, he limited his shooting last year. 2 years ago, he shot much more than last year. He brought back and dialed back his three-point shooting. He went to the basket a lot more. He does need the ball. There's no doubt about it. And now you've added another scorer in Bridges. And let's be fair, as great as Brunson was, he took it to another level once Randall went down and showed that he could score 40 and that he could be this elite player. He became even better without Randall out of necessity. And so I think Knicks fans are fearful, well, you know, what team is the best? Because there were people who think they're better that way. Marco Belletti. There's a bunch of people I know who feel the Knicks were a better team without Randall because it meant Brunson took that next step and became the scorer, and he didn't have to worry about making sure Randall got his. And it's just, well, you've added Bridges. He's a shooter. You've got all these shooters, and if Randall hits a couple shots in a row, he's going to want the ball. Like, that's the fear. But I agree with you. I think Tibbs knows how to work it, and I think they were playing the best basketball that we've seen here in this city in forever in the month of January. They were the best team in the NBA for a full month. So I want to see that back. I don't want to mess with it. If I'm bringing it back, bring it back. If I'm bringing back OG, if I'm, you know, relying on this team again, I have the Villanova 4 now. I want to see Randall involved in it too. But I'm sure there will be some growing pains. It takes some time. It won't be, you know, that's what made the OG Anunoby trade so special to me. What made it so special to me was that it was instant. I mean, that first game against Minnesota, they came out and beat, you know, at the time, the number one seed in the West. Just immediately. In the press conference, Randall's like, yeah, we're going to miss, you know, we're going to miss those guys. We're going to miss Quick, but, you know, we'll see how it goes. That's what he's saying in the press conference after they played the best game of the season practically. Like, it was instant. He instantly meshed and gelled. It was almost like Rose and Tibbs were so simpatico that they got the player that they knew exactly how to incorporate in their team, and overnight it transformed them. And that's rare. It's very rare. Nobody would have been surprised if the Knicks took 4 or 5 games to figure it out. Nobody would have been upset. Everyone would have been like, hey, you got to give it some time. It takes some time to gel. It's a different team now. Nobody would have been surprised. Instead, they hit the ground running and instantly got to another level. So I don't know if you can expect that again. At the start of the year, there's going to be some, you know, give and go. There's going to be Randall wanting the ball. There's going to be, you know, Brunson in the clutch, getting used to what he did last year, taking over when maybe that's not the best way. Like, there's going to be some time to figure it out. But ultimately, they're deep. They're talented. They have scorers. They defend. They work. They hustle. They play minutes. Like, they have a great coach. And they have a GM right now and a, you know, guy running the team in Rose that I trust to go out and make more trades if he feels the need to and understands exactly what the team would need. Somehow, between Rose and Tibbs, Tibbs knows exactly what they need, how to communicate it to Rose, and then he goes and gets it done. That's what it's felt like.
Add WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Oh, making up for it, huh? That's right, good morning.
Nothing to do to save his life, call his wife, and
hey, how are we doing at 4:51? McMonagle with you for another few minutes. The warm-up show is coming your way. You know, I mentioned earlier, and I know a lot of Yankee fans will probably think that I'm trying to find a way to get Volpe out of the leadoff hitter because I suggested DJ LeMahieu a few weeks ago when DJ came back from injury. But obviously, that's not the case. He has been terrible. And hopefully he's turning it around. But Volpe's been struggling. And it made me start to think about a tweak that the Yankee lineup could do. Now, I need Juan Soto and Judge in the first inning. Right? Because people are talking about breaking him up. You know, especially with this lineup, back-to-back. Once you get past them, it's nobody. Maybe you break them up a little bit. I'm okay with breaking them up short, but I need them both in the first inning. That's a must. I cannot allow a pitcher to get through the first inning without facing both Soto and Judge. Must. So if that's the case, and I want to manipulate the lineup here while obviously you're getting some struggles from Volpe over the last 15 games or so as this team has struggled, so has he. I think it's a real interesting idea to lead off Soto, bat Judge third, and use that second spot as a tool and rotate it. Not just lefty-righty, but rotate it based on who, depends on how you want to use it. Either who's hot to keep a hot hitter going and really make that lineup, you know, tough at the, like right now, for me, on Tuesday night's game, this would be my lineup. My lineup, or at least the top three. My lineup would be Soto, Torres, Judge. I'd move Glaver up to the two spot. That is as dynamic a spot to hit in as, like, you have Soto with the best on-base percentage in baseball in front of you, and you've got the best hitter we've seen in 20 years behind you. I mean, that is a spot you are going to get fastballs. So right now, I want to keep Glaber hot. He's got multiple hits in three consecutive games. I want to put Glaber in a spot where he's going to get fastballs. I want to put Glaber in a spot where he's going to get pitched to and see if I can get him really going, confident, feeling good. Because he's so important to the team. And then I can move it around. Right? Right now, maybe against a right-handed pitcher, I could put Verdugo. Verdugo's struggling. He had a home run taken away from him by Kiermaier. But if I put Verdugo in that two spot where I've got Soto getting on base in front of him and Judge as protection behind him, maybe I can get Verdugo going. I could use it as sort of a, you know, a get right spot. Or in a big game that I know I need to score some runs or I want to do some damage early, I got a pitcher who's notorious for getting off to bad starts, I put my hottest hitter outside of those two in there. Because right now it's not Volpe. And I don't know if you want Volpe right now struggling to be the guy who's getting the most at-bats. I like Volpe at the top. He's going to be the leadoff hitter for a long time. Doesn't have to be right now. And especially with the lineup struggling, although they did score 16 runs the other night, they scored 9 runs. So it's you say struggling, but it's the whole lineup in a whole has really, you know, not been what you'd hoped it would be. And you're looking at a bunch of guys you would consider outs right now. I just like the idea of using that two spot in between Soto and Judge as a gift to either someone hot or someone ice cold who I need to get going. I just think that's an interesting concept. Mitchell and Fort Lee, what's up, Mitch?
What's up, Big Mac? I got to tell you, after yesterday when we spoke, things changed in 24 hours. But number one, Big
yes.
Mac,
yes.
Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Yankee Stadium, me and you, how about it, before you go to work? How about it?
Tomorrow night, me and you, Yankee Stadium. You keep asking me. I feel bad constantly saying no. I believe my son has a flag football game on Tuesday night.
Okay, if you can go, let me know.
Right,
I left
you know,
the guy. I left it on, but I figured front row, right field, Big Mac. But I got to tell you something. After yesterday,
one of these days
boy,
I gotta come
farm,
good.
Okay, you got it. You got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two, get into the Yankees yesterday. When Soto's back in that lineup and the team hit like they hit yesterday, the whole team hit. That's what Cashman built. That's the team that we have to have. If we don't have that team as we go, and we don't get, like we said yesterday, we don't get two bullpen guys and maybe another top starting pitcher, we're not going to be great. I don't know how far we'll go. But if the team goes as we go yesterday, that team is awesome. They were just hitting. The whole team hit.
Mitch, I'm with you. They were awesome for a day, and they were awesome two of the last three games. But the problem was that middle game is still there, and the starting pitching I'm still concerned about. And this offense, I'm still a little bit, you know, if Glaber's going to get multiple hits, I think that that's what you see here. You need that other guy. You were getting it from Stanton. He's gone. You got to get it from someone else. And if Glaber Torres, who to me is the most likely person to give it to you, look up and down this lineup. All right, maybe Volpe. But Glaber Torres was an 800 OPS guy last year. Glaber Torres had 25 home runs. Like, he is not as bad as he's been. And maybe he'll course correct and be hot for a month and be better than he was last year. Who knows? But no doubt, he's important. They can't supply. They can't go out and get every bat. They can't fill up every position. They're going to get one hitter, maybe. And they're going to get bullpen help and maybe a starter. And I think that's the interesting thing for me now about the Yankee trade deadline is you know you need relievers. You know you probably need one corner infielder. Right? That's the go-to. But if you find that the impact players, because I believe in getting impact players. I understand the idea of, you know, getting a bunch of smaller moves and hoping one hits. Like, you know, Evan used the example of Jacques Peterson and Jorge Soler for the Braves in 21. I mean, it's true. They traded for Jacques Peterson and Jorge Soler, and they won the World Series and beat the Dodgers, who traded for Turner and Max Scherzer. I mean, who are the better two players of those four players? Clearly, Scherzer and Turner seemed like the more slam dunk trade. Scherzer couldn't make his last start, and the Braves beat them. So I understand that you don't necessarily need superstars, but I'm looking for impact players. If I'm trading for a corner infielder, I want McMahon. I want a player I expect to come in. Rengifo's leading the league in hitting right now. Bring him in here. Like, he might not be great for forever, but this year he's having a good year. Like, I want impact players. I don't want to take a chance on guys. I want impact players. And the same thing with the bullpen. So if Brian Cashman finds himself in a situation where the impact player comes from the starting rotation as opposed to a bullpen where, again, not many teams selling, everybody buying, and God knows everybody needs relief help. Everybody. Where the starting market might be a little bit easier to navigate and find someone at the top of the starting pitching market that, you know, maybe you and the Orioles are the only two teams competing for as opposed to everybody competing for bullpen help. But if you could do that, bring in a starter and now transition Luis Gil to the bullpen, which still makes me sick to my stomach thinking about because I want to get him in a playoff game the way he started, but it'll start to make sense to me if that's... I'd rather do that than strike out and get nothing. Like, if they feel the starting pitcher is the best way to impact the entire overall pitching and move starters to the bullpen as opposed to trade for bullpen guys, then that's what they need to do. But they have to add. No doubt about it. They have to add. This is the year. And that was the show. Alex, thank you very much. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you for listening. The warm-up show is next. Everybody, enjoy the rest of your Monday on this first day of July. Happy Bobby Bonilla Day. That Bobby Bonilla, lucky son of a gun. I'll catch you guys tomorrow for a midnight ride. I'll see you then. Be well. I'm out of here.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM.